Wake up! It's the Sleep Unplugged Podcast, episode 96, Narcolepsy Stories. My patience has reached its end. Welcome everyone to the Sleep Unplugged Podcast. My name is Chris Winner. I'm a neurologist and sleep specialist and your host. For this different episode of the podcast, I hope you enjoy it. We'll get to that more in a minute. If you're new to the if you're new to the Sleep Unplugged family, welcome. If you're a veteran, welcome back. So this episode sort of came about recently. I was talking to Maeve, my producer, an occasional writer of episodes. She wrote last week's episode on sleep and breath, and it was a really popular episode. And when we were communicating, she said, I would really like it, and I think your listeners would too, if you would do an episode every now and then based more upon patient stories, you know, no confidentiality, nothing that would be used to identify people. And I've been kind of musing on that for a little bit. So that's where this came about. And I'll get more about the title, where that came from, in a minute. This is my podcast. We talk about sleep related matters every week, and really happy that you're here. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can reach out through social media, Dr. Chris Winner Twitter, Dr. Chris Winner Instagram. We have a YouTube page where we post all the videos. I've got two books, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep's Broken, How to Fix It, as well as The Rested Child. This past week, a bunch of big milestones for us. We surpassed 150,000 downloads for the podcast. Really big thank you to everybody for making this possible, for supporting the podcast and clearly spreading it around. We don't really advertise, sort of an underground situation, but I guess when you hit 150,000 downloads, you're no longer underground. So we're happy no matter how big the family gets. And then my first book, The Sleep Solution, strangely, it's always done very well. It's always outperformed my second book, The Rested Child. But this week, I just happened to look on Amazon and I got this little bestseller number one banner. It was the number one sleep book on Amazon. And for a while, it was like the number 28 medical book of all, like all medical books, and, you know, of Audible downloads, any Audible, like with a crawfish sing and, you know, eat, sleep, you know, any book out there, it was like number 500 or something like that. It went through a kind of a crazy period, and I'm not sure why it exploded all of a sudden, but I just want to thank everybody out there for supporting it and continue. I mean, cause this book came out, you know, 6 years ago. So it's great that people still think highly of it and continue to buy it. So I really appreciate that. We always start the show off with comments, corrections, criticisms, compliments. And our friend of the show, Janice Cates, wrote in about our nicotine episode. And she said, I just listened to your nicotine episode. And she said, I think there is some evidence for a punishment approach to quit smoking. For example, smoking the whole pack. And we said that on there, like that was always the thing growing up, that if your parents caught you smoking, they would make you smoke the whole pack or smoke all the cigars. And she wrote, but these approaches are generally not preferred as they're not reinforcing a new preferred behavior and can have unintended consequences. Like you probably wouldn't feel so great about your parents if they told you to do that. But she said, we do actually use this approach medically sometimes for alcohol reduction with antabuse and other meds that make you sick when you drink. So I think I'd said, I'm not sure if there's a lot of scientific merit to making you go out behind the barn and smoke the whole pack of cigarettes, but Janice said that there might be some evidence there. So before we get into the show, and I'll explain some things here, I just want to give a shout out to my buddies in Cleveland. I was in Cleveland this past week speaking to sleep doctors from University Health System up there, as well as the Cleveland Clinic, Case Western. Really, really outstanding sleep specialists up there, man. If you had to pick a city to have a sleep problem in, Cleveland, you could do worse than Cleveland. There's so many good sleep professionals up there and people I look up to. So it's always fun to get up there and talk to people in Cleveland, and got to go and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's up there. So I was in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame shop and got a David Bowie t-shirt. I'm a big fan of an album I came to a bit later in my fandom of David Bowie was Station to Station. So I got my Station to Station t-shirt at the Rock Hall. But speaking of the Rock Hall, if you remember back to episode 71, that was the episode we did Cold-Blooded, Cold as Ice and Hot-Blooded. Those are Foreigner songs. So Foreigner just got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is obviously in Cleveland. And I couldn't be more excited. I was looking around for a Foreigner shirt, but the announcement hadn't come this week, but there was a lot of buzz. You know, would they get in? I mean, they've been eligible for over 20 years. I mean, Mick Jones, the lead guitarist, is 79 years old. And so I said back in the episode on 71 that it was a crime that Foreigner was not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And actually, you know, there's a lot of very high level musicians who got together and made a video that basically said, look, we got to vote him in. So they were third in terms of vote getters. Peter Frampton and Dave Matthews edged them out, which is shocking. I'm a big Dave Matthews fan. When I was going to the University of Virginia as an undergrad, Dave Matthews, you know, played this little nightclub. So anybody from Charlottesville is a big fan of Dave Matthews. But man, Foreigner were just huge. And so we broke with tradition last week and did another Police song, even though we had talked about the Police before. And I'm breaking with tradition again. The title of today's podcast, the subtitle, My Patience Has Reached Its End, is from the Foreigner song, Blue Morning, Blue Day, off their second album, Hot-Blooded. And I'm sorry, second album, Double Vision. And just really, really excited those guys are in there. And I think this is a doubly appropriate song because the Blue Morning, Blue Day starts off with the line, out on the street, it's 6 a.m., another sleepless night. So giving a big salute to Foreigner, they're in the Rock Hall. Now, if we can just get Boston in the Hall of Fame, that would be great. And you know, we've talked about this a lot more in the first season. We don't have guests on the podcast, but we have people who are invited. And so far that list stands at 5. Jada, Brad Pitt, Celine Dion, Huey Lewis, and the UVA basketball player, Kia Clark. But I'm going to throw in there Mick Jones and Lou Graham, a Foreigner. So we now have 7 invited guests to the podcast. I'm guessing we're never going to have any of these people on the podcast. But any of those individuals, if you're listening, you have an open invitation to be on any episode of the podcast you want. And, you know, Mick Jones is 79 years old. One of the frustrations about him not getting into the Hall of Fame is that these guys are getting older. I mean, Lou Graham had a pretty significant brain tumor he dealt with. And Mick Jones was just recently diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So we wish Mick and Lou the best in terms of their health and their ability to make amazing music. So this episode of the podcast, I've been thinking about a lot, and it's really a convergence of a lot of patient stories and little things that have happened in and around my treatment of the condition of narcolepsy. And so if you're a listener of the podcast, we have done several episodes related to narcolepsy. We've done episodes related to the treatments of narcolepsy. We've done episodes about, you know, what narcolepsy is. We talked about narcolepsy being the rare disorder that isn't. Episode 39 was about the different treatments for narcolepsy. So narcolepsy is very near and dear to my heart. These patients, to me, are one of the biggest reasons why I like to see patients in clinic. It's not easy to be a doctor these days. It's not easy to have a clinic, but my narcolepsy patients really, really keep me going. And so there were just several things that kind of happened that were sort of, they weren't really connected, but I thought, man, if we could kind of thread these things together, I think they would make a really interesting podcast. And so I'll divide them up into little sections. The first section, the first little subheading was a patient of mine that I was talking to him during our, you know, visit every 4 months. And he's on a couple controlled substances for narcolepsy, the sleepiness and cataplexy that goes along with it. Most medications for the condition of narcolepsy are controlled substances. except for one, Wake Ixpetolisant, which we've talked about before. And when we were talking about, okay, well, how are the medications working for you? Any side effects from them? Are they keeping you awake? How's work? How's your social life? How are things going? The standard stuff you talk about during a medical follow-up or, a narcolepsy follow-up. And he had me laughing so hard because he was talking about how he has to behave in and around the refilling of his medications. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, when I go to the pharmacy, I've got to be really cool because if they don't have it in stock or they tell me it's in stock and I get there and it's not, or they say, oh yeah, we forgot to order it, I have to be really cool because if I'm not, they're definitely going to think I'm some sort of crazy drug-seeking sort of individual. And, I was kind of laughing at the situation and thought, okay, that's funny, but that's probably not real. Or you're being a little bit, dramatic about it. No. In fact, I was talking to a patient not too long after that who said, yeah, not only does the pharmacist, kind of give me this sort of stink eye look when I show up to refill my medications, but at one point she said, this sort of pharmacy tech person said to one of my patients who lives in Virginia Beach. So I practice in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia Beach is a city in Virginia. It's several hours away from Charlottesville, where my physical office is, but we do mainly telehealth visits and have since COVID. Virginia is a wonderful state for that. And the pharmacy tech said something like, now, wait a minute. Why are you seeing a doctor in Charlottesville, Virginia, for your narcolepsy medications when you live? Almost like she was figuring out this elaborate scheme. Excuse me. And the patient was like, what do you care about where I go? She said, I want to see this particular narcolepsy specialist, and he happens to be in Charlottesville. Sometimes I drive there, sometimes I see him via telehealth, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But she said, but I could tell that the pharmacy tech was working on the Netflix four-part drama series about busting the narcolepsy ring that was Mike. I mean, it was just, and it really is frustrating to me. And this is where the title of the song comes from. My patience has reached its end, is that I'm really frustrated with the unnecessary problems that my narcolepsy patients have to deal with. They've got enough on their plate that they don't really need to be dealing with the pharmacy tech at 5 o'clock after work on a Tuesday when they're perfectly within their rights to go get their medications filled. Trust me, I have very strict policies about how often I see my narcolepsy patients. I make sure everything, all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And so pharmacy tech, you got nothing to worry about. How about you just greet my patient with a smile, like any other patient who's refilling Lipitor or Atenolol or Lisinopril, and just move on with your day and stop trying to make them feel like they're doing something wrong or that they're dirty for doing it or whatever the situation is. And so that really leads to my second heading, which is the idea that these medications, for the most part, are scheduled drugs. And what that means is there's certain restrictions around them. And if anybody's ever, dealt with drugs that are scheduled, it just means you might not be able to get a prescription with refills, or you might have to see your doctor a few extra times. There might be a few more hurdles to jump through because some governing body has determined that the safety profile or the abuse potential or something with this medication is such that it needs to be controlled a little bit tighter than the other drugs. So it's like the kombuchas you can just buy, but there's certain kombuchas have a little bit of alcohol in them and you got to show an ID to get those, whatever. And I have no problem with that. I think that governing bodies can do what they want. But the problem comes with the stigma that sometimes gets attached to them. So, listen, I've been in clinical practice since 2004. That's 20 years. If you want to have a conversation with all the difficulties that I've encountered with scheduled drugs for narcolepsy patients, it's going to be an incredibly short conversation. Because the fact of the matter is, my patients are not getting addicted to these drugs, number one. They are as addicted to their drugs as I am these, which are my reading glasses. So when I read a menu close up or some fine print on the back of some packaging, I can't see it because my eyeballs are not the right shape, right? So I've got glasses for far away and contacts for far away and readers for close up. I'm not addicted to them, but I can't see and function properly without them. In other words, if you said, look, Chris, you're not allowed to wear your glasses for a week, I'm not withdrawing from my readers. I'm just frustrated that everything's blurry and it's harder for me to live my life. In fact, I really don't like glasses. Kind of hate them. I have since third grade since I started wearing them. And for people who don't know, if you really sit down with individuals who have narcolepsy and talk to them about their feelings around their medications, in general, and I want to make a disclaimer here, I don't have narcolepsy and I treat a bunch of people with narcolepsy, but that doesn't make me necessarily expert on the condition. But I talk to my narcolepsy patients a lot. We're seeing each other 2, 3 times a year minimum. So we have a lot of time to fill. And I enjoy talking to my narcolepsy patients. They're interesting. They teach me a lot. One of the things they've taught me for years is they don't like their medications. They like what they do for them. I like being able to drive to work without falling asleep at stoplights. I like being able to sit down with a client and not fall asleep in front of them. I like that. That helps me out a lot in my life. But in terms of liking their medication, oh, I can't wait to get home and take my Adderall. No, that is not how these drugs work. And again, we have an open communication here. Dr. Chris Winter, Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter, Instagram, Dr. Chris Winter, TikTok. If you're a patient out there with narcolepsy and you're like, no. That is not true at all. Man, all I do is sit in my office and think about 1 o'clock p.m. when I get to take my 20 milligrams of short-acting Adderall or my second 200 milligram modafinil pill. I love it. I mean, it's just the. In fact, there are studies with a lot of these medications where they, the pitolisant we were talking about earlier, where they've actually given them to people and people don't really care a lot about them, And again, if you're not particularly sleepy, you don't really want them. And you see that in the narcolepsy community. When, for instance, you start a new medication that really helps with their sleepiness, they'll often stop taking the old drugs, the ones that make them feel jittery and upset. Like they just, or if they're on vacation or have a long weekend, they'll often tell me they don't take their medications when on during the weekend. They just don't like the way they feel. So I think we need to stop with the whole drug addiction thing. And it just listen, that's we need to be careful with these medications. I'm not advocating that we don't, but we're not being careful with the medications to prevent our patients from getting addicted to these dangerous drugs. It's not what's happening. If you go around and talk to people who treat narcolepsy, or better yet, you talk to a bunch of narcolepsy patients, that is not what's happening. I think it's also important to point out that even with all the amazing medications that we have for narcolepsy, we're not normalizing the majority of them, most likely. So, the idea that your narcolepsy patient is going to do well on just one medication is not a real, it's not real. In fact, the two things that really frustrate me when I go around and talk to other sleep specialists, one is the comment, well, we just don't have a lot of narcolepsy patients here in our clinic. Oh, man. Talk about my patients reaching its end. That sentence drives me crazy because it's code for we don't look for them, or worse yet, we're failing to recognize them. There's a study that said About 1 in 20 people that walk into a sleep clinic have narcolepsy. It's the most common cause of excessive sleepiness outside of sleep apnea. So you're a guy or a woman who's been practicing sleep medicine for 13 years and you've got one narcolepsy patient in your clinic. There's an explanation for that. It's not a kind one. It's you're missing people. I mean, why do you think so many people are sleepy in your clinic? Just the sleep apnea? So it's very, very frustrating sometimes when there is this resistance. And we know, even within the sleep specialist community, there is often a resistance to recognize, diagnose, and treat narcolepsy, which is another huge frustration of mine. In fact, I was in Georgia at a sleep meeting, and I was speaking about narcolepsy. And at the end, I was like, I'll open up for questions. First question was, thanks for talking about that narcolepsy medication, Chris. Do you know how many people have died taking it? So, to be honest, I don't know the answer, but I can almost assure you it's extremely small. Because these drugs that are controlled substances often have programs associated with them that make them very meticulous information keepers. Registries are out there. And so, have there been people who have died who've taken narcolepsy? I'm sure there have, but the number is extremely small. And when you start looking at old drugs like Valium, and Ativan and clonazepam that I'm telling you get prescribed like crazy, I am certain that the number of deaths associated with those drugs is much higher. In fact, I looked it up many, many years ago when I did a lecture on narcolepsy because I was so frustrated by doctors' reluctance to help narcolepsy patients and prescribe the proper medications. That they would often cite safety concerns, like this doctor, well, I don't want to kill anybody, and these are dangerous drugs, man. They're controlled substances, man. I think some of them have black box warnings. Now, that's just ignorance, man. You haven't read the black box warning. You don't know about these medications. So, fine, you're ignorant about that, but you're also being ignorant about drugs that you prescribe a lot. I mean, there are some primary care doctors where I practice that have absolutely no trouble writing for Klonopin to help somebody sleep at night, Ativan to help somebody sleep at night. I mean, these medications carry pretty significant risk if you look up deaths when those medications are found in somebody's system. So I think we've got to elevate ourselves and challenge ourselves here that fear, when it's unfounded by information, is really just a bad look. And it has a consequence. And that consequence is when you shy away out of fear from treating a condition that you say on your door you're out there to treat, you really tend to hurt other people. And I've said before, that failure to treat is either because of your ignorance of the subject matter that you say you're a specialist in, or you're acting in a more paternalistic fashion where you're making decisions about your patients and their therapies without involving them in that. In other words, well, I had this one patient who took a drug one time and this thing happened that was bad. So I'm going to make sure that none of my patients get that drug. Well, that's not the way I mean, I've had, bad outcomes with every drug that I use for restless leg syndrome, narcolepsy. I've had bad outcomes with CPAPs for sleep apnea, you name it. I mean, sure, I can give you one thing. It's like pumpernickel, pastrami on pumpernickel sandwiches. I'm sure somebody out there has choked on one and died, but we continue to make pastrami on rice sandwiches. So anyway, I just think we have to be very careful about those kinds of things. And there's another story that I think was really enlightening to me was there's a fantastic narcolepsy advocate, Matt. I'm not going to say his last name because I didn't really. I don't think he would care because he's really out there in terms of in the narcolepsy space. And if you follow me on Twitter, I made a comment that it's always been sort of this kind of dream that I'd like to bench press 300 pounds. I think that'd be really cool. And I think I did it in high school, but as I get older, the more I think I just got close to it and just told people I'd bench pressed 300 pounds when I was in high school, but I never actually did. But maybe I did. I really don't remember. And maybe somebody was touching it with their fingers. I want a legitimate lift at 300. So I put that on Twitter one time, and Matt, this fantastic narcolepsy advocate who has narcolepsy himself, said, "I'm going to do it with you. I'd like to do that as well too." And he's big guy, big weightlifter guy. So we've been kind of back and forth. Hey, I hit 265, and Matt's like, "Man, I hit 270." And he's in the lead now. I think he just hit like 290, or maybe two. I think he might have hit just hit 295. And when I was watching him the first time he posted a video, I think he was like doing 270. It looks so easy to him. I mean, if you watch me, it kind of looks like somebody who's getting choked to death. Like their upper body is still because somebody's got their hands around their neck, and then their lower body and legs are just flailing all over the place. Like that's what it looks like when I'm trying to lift this weight. Matt, man, just sat there, this little Zen pose, locked it up, stretched it out, sat down, little pause, straight up, perfect lift. Like Olympic level lift. And the first time he did one, I wrote him, I said, "Matt, that looked really easy for you. I think you're holding back because you feel bad that we're in this competition, but there really is no competition because you're super strong and way stronger than I am." And he wrote me back and said, "It's not an act, Chris. It's not, I'm not holding back. Think about the way you lift, and you got your, I like to listen to the cult, love removal machine. Like that's a jam for lifting some weight. I've got that blaring in my ears, and you're getting fired up. You can do it, just, and then you do it. You try to get yourself psyched up. It's like, Chris, because of cataplexy, when cataplexy is that sudden loss of muscle tone." When narcolepsy patients get excited, and we've talked about that in our narcolepsy episodes, the rare disorder that isn't, that was episode 26. He said, "I can't get excited to lift. I have to be super relaxed, super calm, and I can't really lift and get to that part where you're like, oh my God, I might not be able to get it up. I might be stuck here. Like this might be a failed lift because when I panic, or I freak out, I lose muscle tone. So I can't push it. I can't, like today, I actually went in and was lifting and tried to hit 290. I'm at 285 right now. I tried to hit 290 and didn't really even come close. It just wasn't a great day. And so got, 2 inches up, I'm like, I can't do this, and just dropped it right back down. He's like, I can't do that. He said, I'll just drop it right on my chest. So when I fail, I can ease it, down to the little things that protect me. He's like, I don't have that ability to do that. So it really made me think, like, it's just great when you deal with as many narcolepsy patients as I do. It's fun to learn something. Like I never really thought about, wow, you can't tap into the beast. We've all got the beast. We've all got that music we listen to psych us up for something, the big road trip, the athletic event. The public speaking when you're really nervous about it, but you got to give a presentation. Like you don't have that ability to tap into that. Everything's got to be calm and relaxed for you. And we know this. A lot of narcolepsy patients avoid public things and parties and stuff like that because of that. So anyway, so the other frustration and the other patient story I have is kind of relates back to doctors really not embracing narcolepsy. Which I don't quite get. Let me tell you something. If you're in the medical field and you're around patients or clients or whatever, you're a massage therapist, and that one client who comes in immediately falls asleep every time you start your massage, and you're like, well, this is weird because he's just sleeping through the whole thing. Like, what am I even doing here? You were seeing narcolepsy patients. That unbelievable sleepy person in your business, in your school, your client that really struggles to stay awake. And It's sad to me that more clinicians within the field of medicine don't embrace narcolepsy, because it's such a fulfilling and rewarding thing to go on that journey with a patient, to have that privilege, to work as a team, to try to figure out which of these medications are going to work best for you. And it's a story after story of success. And Chris, I wouldn't have graduated. I wouldn't have done these things without you. We've diagnosed them in professional athletes, you know, and it's wonderful to help somebody get out from under this amazing, amazing burden that is the sleepiness of narcolepsy. My next to last frustration is I've talked to a lot of patients who, through the years, have been told wildly inappropriate things about their narcolepsy. You can't have a job. You can't, you know, drive a car, which you can drive a car if you have narcolepsy in most places. You may not be able to get a commercial driver's license and you can't fly a plane, but you can drive a car. In fact, I would be much more confident about being driven around by my treated narcolepsy patients than the unbelievable number of people out there with things like sleep apnea or shift workers that are not treated properly. I also had a patient tell me one time when we were talking, she just kind of casually mentioned, "But I can't have kids." And I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry that you can't have kids. Why can you not have kids?" She goes, "Well, I mean, I can have them, but I really can't because of the narcolepsy." I'm like, "Well, who told you that? Of course you can have children if you have narcolepsy. In fact, I think narcolepsy is a very difficult condition to manage, but number one, it's not given that you're going to give it to your children. In fact, the penetrance is not particularly high. Number two, to me, narcolepsy is not a condition that I would necessarily want. Let me tell you what I really wouldn't want. Having narcolepsy and not knowing that I have narcolepsy, which is the lot of a lot of people. There are a lot of people out there who are wildly sleepy, falling asleep in class, falling asleep driving their car, and just think that they're sleepy. They've rationalized it. They have no idea they have a chronic condition called narcolepsy because the average person takes what, 10 to 15 years to fall asleep. And so this individual was told by her primary care doctor, "Oh, you're not allowed to have kids." And, you know, I told her, "Look, you can have kids. It's your decision. You can choose not to, but, you know, you can also choose to have kids. And if they don't have narcolepsy, they don't have narcolepsy. If you have narcolepsy, you've got it. You know what you're looking for. And you'll be able to support that child and get them the help they need right from the beginning." Anyway, the last thing that I will mention that really frustrates me about narcolepsy is the way we continue to look at it sometimes as a joke. And that can be small. You know, if somebody falls asleep in class a lot, you play a little joke on them. You leave the class when they fall asleep. So when they wake up, everybody's gone. But even bigger, like in Hollywood and movies, it's often a trope, right? That the narcolepsy patient is the, you know, the guy who during the stressful event in the climax of the movie is falling asleep and he falls asleep during funny. I mean, they kind of make it a joke. And there's problems with that. Number one, it's not a joke. It's a chronic medical condition that requires support. The bigger problem I see with that is that we create an image of narcolepsy that isn't what narcolepsy looks like, and that makes our job as narcolepsy specialists harder because people don't recognize narcolepsy because they're looking for that jokey kind of condition that we often portray in media. In fact, I can't count the number of times I've diagnosed narcolepsy in a patient and they've said, "Really? Wow, because I thought narcolepsy was that thing when you fall asleep and it's really funny. You know, when you're cooking pasta, you just fall asleep and your face falls in the noodles." You know what? They've got this kind of bizarre, no, it's just an individual who seems to be sleepy at inappropriate times, who doesn't seem to have complete control of their wakefulness during the day and often has periods of falling asleep. So I hope that if you're listening to this episode and you have narcolepsy, you understand there's a lot of doctors, and there's a bunch of them in Cleveland, that really support you. And if you're not with one of those doctors right now, you're with a doctor that's basically giving you 10 milligrams of Adderall and doesn't seem to be able to muster up any other solutions for you, that you understand that there are other doctors out there that you can see that will take your condition seriously and can't promise to normalize your ability to be awake, because I don't think we're successful at that all that much, but we will really work hard to improve it. So you might not be quite as awake as the people in your art history class, but you're going to get a lot closer to that state with those doctors than you are the doctor who's treating you right now. I don't want somebody who tolerates narcolepsy treating my patients. I want somebody who embraces it, who understands it, not only understands the pathophysiology of the condition, but the way the modern sleep specialist treats narcolepsy. That's really important to me. So I hope that if you have it, you find that person. I hope that if you are somebody who is excessively sleepy, struggles to stay awake, you've been diagnosed as having depression, you've been diagnosed with delayed sleep phase syndrome, all this stuff, but you're like, nothing works. I am so debilitatingly sleepy. I don't know what to do. Find a narcolepsy specialist who really knows what she's doing and talk to her about it, because they are out there. There's a whole narcolepsy network out there of people who can help you find that person. And my final hope is that if you're somebody who doesn't have narcolepsy and you're not sleepy, but you know people who are, you will help to be that individual who says, look, can I talk to you a little bit? And you go off and have lunch somewhere. Look, I see you falling asleep all the time. Is everything okay? You know, and they say, well, yeah, I don't know. I've always been this way. I get plenty of sleep, but I still fall asleep. Well, listen, I heard a podcast about narcolepsy. Have you ever thought about that? Do you think maybe that's something you could have? Like, for a lot of people out there, it's never been brought to their attention that they might have narcolepsy. Spoken to a lot of school nurses and really tried to plant that seed with them. Hey, these kids that are falling asleep over the place, consider this diagnosis before you know, allow teachers to jump to the conclusion that they're just staying up too late on their phones. So if you're a narcolepsy patient, we support you. And if you're somebody who's excessively sleepy, we support you as well too. So that's it. If you want to tell your narcolepsy stories because you have them or you know somebody who has them, Dr. Chris Winter, Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter, Instagram. My books, The Sleep Solution and The Rested Child, both feature narcolepsy heavily in them. And you can find our videos on the YouTube page. And congratulations to Forner. We will put Blue Morning, Blue Day on the Spotify Sleep Unplugged playlist. And until next week, sleep well.